Good morning. Sorry about the distraction with me walking back there, but I don't know if you heard the little rattling of the offering plate on the glass there. It would have probably driven me nuts. So, how many of you have been able to watch any basketball this past week? Anybody? I knew Jerry had. It's been interesting to watch. I felt bad for Purdue. It was one of those weeks that everybody was probably rooting against them because most people like the Cinderella story. But at a college much like Purdue, there's a story of a Christian speaker who came in to address almost a chapel experience there at the school. I'm sure this day and age it was optional. Not everybody had to go, and many students may have slept in, but they still had a full house. And the speaker was up on stage, and he's talking to the class and or to the students of the school. And he asked if there's a physics professor in the house, in the auditorium. And sure enough, a man raises his hand, and he's invited up to the stage. And he says, "You're a physics professor." He says, "Yes." And he said, "Do you know the law of the pendulum?" And the physics professor said, "Of course I do. I chair the physics department here at the university." And he said, "Well, would you mind sharing the law of the pendulum with all the students here?" And to put it simply, the law of the pendulum states that you have a fulcrum and you have a weight, and that weight is attached with a string or a rod to the fulcrum, the pivot point. And the law says that as far as you bring the pendulum or the weight back, it will never exceed the starting point. And it doesn't take too much for us to realize that we don't add energy to things in this world. They tend to have entropy. They slow down. So if you take and had a pivot point on the ceiling and you had a string that came down and you pulled a weight back and I stood here, if I let it go, it would never go further than this point because it's just going to lose energy and slow down. And so the physics professor explains this to the entire auditorium of students, and he asked the physics professor a really interesting question. He said, "Do you believe the law of the pendulum?" "So of course I do. I'm the chair of the physics department." I said, "Okay, great." And then he cued off stage to one of the technical people, and down from the ceiling comes a 16-pound shot put, much like what you would use, you know, when you spin around and throw it. And it was in a net, and that net was attached to a cable, and that cable was attached to the ceiling. And he said, "You believe it?" And he said, "Of course I believe it." He said, "Then I need you to come with me." And he brought him to the edge of the stage. And then he pulled the weight, the 16-pound shot, put right up to the professor's nose. Then he pulled it back an inch or so for good measure. And he said, "What I need you to do, you know the law of the pendulum is true. You said you believe it yourself. I'm going to let this go, and I need you to stand right where you are and not move. And you know that it can't come back any further. And we'll even pull it a few inches just to make sure." Well, he let that go. The physics professor said, "Okay." And sure enough, as it swung this way and swung back, that physics professor jumps out of the way. And the speaker asked the auditorium filled with students, "Did your professor believe the law of the pendulum?" And the answer in unison was no. This idea of faith is a tricky one. Because as we see from that story and as we know from our own experience, faith is more than a simple profession with our mouth. The words we speak can sometimes be called aspirational faith. We want to believe those things. We say we believe those things. And sometimes when we say them enough times, we do begin to believe those things, where they take root in us and we actually live them out. But if we were to look and take an inventory of the things we say we believe, we would find that when things get really difficult, when the shot put is coming back towards our faith, that sometimes our true beliefs don't match up with the things that we profess. As we look at our story here today, and we're continuing our series on this road to the cross, not necessarily from Jesus' perspective. We've looked at that a lot over the years. We're looking from the disciples' perspective. Why? Because I think that we can relate to the disciples a lot. So we're walking in their shoes for a few weeks as we approach Easter. And we see from our scripture this morning in chapter 4 that just as we do, the disciples also struggled with faith. Even though they'd seen Jesus do amazing and miraculous things, they still struggled to have their actions line up with what they professed. When things got hard, when the temperature got high, when the wind and the waves were blowing, it wasn't as easy for them. Just like it's not easy for us. It's been fitting this week. I can tell you with all certainty that as much as any of you may feel like this message was pointed in your direction, it's been preached far more times to me this week. I haven't had very many panic attacks in life, but this week there were a couple where I had to work so hard on my breathing just to get myself back to okay, as things were hard. Beth and I had to confront some local doctors that did some real rough things to Anna on our way to Cincinnati. Not things that were done with malice or any evil intent, but things that nonetheless were harmful. In the fog of war, in the confusion of trying to help her get better. And almost as a parade, one after the next, in the days we've been in the hospital, we had to sit down, we had to reconcile, we had to make right. That's not easy. We had to yet again board her onto an ambulance, carry her on a sheet. The words of Jesus are so helpful over and over again to remember. But faith isn't easy. And just as it was for the disciples, it's not something we profess once and are simply done with. It's this collective of our experiences with Jesus and our experiences with God, where we see that God was there for me then and He will be there for me now. That God has kept His promises always and He will continue to keep His promises moving forward. That God has the best for me then and now and always. It's not just believing His words, it's believing the intent behind them. It's trusting that God truly does love us and want the absolute best. And if you, like me, have ever struggled when the storm rages to have your internal faith match the profession of your mouth, then I believe you could put yourselves, just like I have this week, in the shoes of the disciples and learn from their experience as they walked with Jesus or traveled with Jesus through the storm. The first thing I want to look at in our time together is that Jesus invites us, just as He did His disciples, through the storm. And the word "through" is so important here. Mark chapter 4, verse 35, "That day when evening came, He said to His disciples, 'Let us go over to the other side.'" Jesus doesn't here invite His disciples to a storm. He doesn't say, "Guys, we're going to go and we're going to experience some wild stuff." The storm was so inconsequential to Jesus that He simply says, our destination is the other side. The invitation is to travel with Him, and the storm is just the opposition along the way. It's the thing that happens. But again, Jesus didn't even feel the need to prepare them for it, because He had it. He had it taken care of. He said, "Let's go over to the other side. He didn't say, let's try to get to the other side. I don't know if you have seen Star Wars. It's been around for a while. There's a character named Yoda, and he's famous for saying, there is no try. There is simply do or do not. And Jesus doesn't say to his disciples, let's try and make it to the other side. Let's see what happens. He simply says, we're going to the other side. This is what we're doing. And the disciples knew that anytime they followed Jesus at this point, we're not on chapter 1 of Mark, we're not at the very beginning of their experience, that anytime they traveled with him, some interesting things happened. We've already got some stories. We've seen Jesus heal the sick. He's helped the lame walk again. He's had the paralyzed have their function restored. They've already experienced opposition from the religious class. They've experienced opposition at chapter 4, where we are now, from Jesus' own family and friends where he grew up. The whole idea of the prophet having no honor in their hometown. And I could only imagine from the disciples' experience, that would be a little bit hard to wrap your mind around. Well, geez, we understand that maybe the religious teachers have a problem with Jesus, but his own family and friends, those he grew up with, his old Sunday school teacher, Saturday school teacher back then for the Jewish, they don't believe in him. They have opposition. They've seen Jesus overcome. They've seen him amaze. And now they're seeing the crowds join around him. It's interesting from our passage here, we see that Jesus is already in the boat. Because it says they joined him in the boat. So Jesus is there, and Jesus would often be in a boat as he preached because so many people were coming to hear Jesus speak. The water gave kind of an amphitheater effect, as generally you had a little bit of a bank. I don't know if you've been to our new park here in Fort Wayne, but it's a great example of that, where if you were to go and stand, they sometimes have a little platform near the water and speak. There are great acoustics because on the side of the river, the banks come up and the sound is beautiful. I've listened to some concerts there and it sounds amazing. Better than expensive concert halls, because God created this basin. Well, Jesus would use that, and there were two things that were kind of special about it. One was the acoustics that we talked about, but number two, the crowd would press in on Jesus so much that they had to begin to put Jesus on a boat. And then Jesus would be a few feet offshore, so there was a little bit of separation. Otherwise, the crowd, so desperate for a miracle to touch Jesus, they would begin to push in on him. So, in a sense, for crowd control, so that he could speak and preach. Just before, if we look at the beginning of chapter 4, Jesus has been speaking and preaching on what parables are there for. And we'll have that for another time. But Jesus here is in the boat. Again, like we said, the disciples have already watched so much. They've seen so many amazing miracles. And in many ways, Jesus thought all they needed was to hear, we're going to the other side. He invites them to come along. And we'll ask this question again at the end of the message. But knowing what you know about Jesus, knowing that sometimes the waters get rough, sometimes the world brings opposition, if you were standing where the disciples were standing and Jesus is a few feet away in the water, in the boat, and he says, come on in, let's go to the other side, do you get into that boat? Do you step into that boat knowing that he loves you, but also knowing that anything could happen? In fact, I think the disciples may have started to get the idea that not anything could happen, that anything would happen. Because Jesus didn't have boring stories. And that I can kind of relate. Some of you who have walked with me for a long time and heard the crazy stories of the car accidents I've been in, like the time the Hummer hit me. Maybe, like my business partner Landon, when I go on a trip, he'll often say a prayer for me, and I appreciate that. But one of the things he prays for is he says, God, give Jeff a boring trip. I don't want any crazy stories or adventures to hear about. Give him a boring and routine trip. Help the plane to get there exactly when it's supposed to. And, you know, I don't want all the strange things happening, because I tend to be a magnet for that. And Jesus was too. There were no boring trips with the disciples. Do you get into that boat? When you look at the difficult storms that your life has already had, if you could rewind back to the beginning and Jesus gives you his hand and says, get in the boat, knowing everything that you're going to go through, knowing all of the pain, all of the anguish, all of the sleepless nights that may come, do you still get into the boat? Because that is at heart of what the disciples were experiencing here. Second thing for us to look at together is that Jesus sleeps as the disciples panic. Verse 37, a small storm came up. No, that's not what it says. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, the rear of the boat, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, Teacher, don't you care if we drown? Again, it's not a small storm. It's a furious squall. Shared a little bit of this in the funeral that I gave this week for a good friend, for my business partner, Landon's mother. As we talked about the body being a tent. When I grew up, we'd only go camping if there was a tornado. And I'm not sure that this was something we did on purpose, but it always seemed to be the occasion. I can't tell you how many times I had to climb a tree at the campground just to get our tent out of it. Got good at mending tents before I found out they really aren't that expensive. But when we went, the rest of the campground said, it's time to go home. Spent a lot of time at the laundromat. On one such occasion, I was in our small sailboat. I was out on the water. It was a beautiful day. And then out of nowhere, the skies became dark. And what was a nice, breezy day became a crazy, windy day. And if you know anything about Kosciuszko County or watch them on the weather radar, storms can come out of nowhere. And I'm on the lake, and all of a sudden, tornado sirens are going off, and I realize I have a problem. Thankfully, at that point, the boat goes pretty fast when you're in a sailboat, and everyone is rushing. I can see from shore as they're all getting to the campground, and it's my dad and I on the sailboat. We end up beaching the sailboat in a very impressive way. Normally, you get the front third of the boat on the ground. We got the whole thing on the sand. Probably did a little damage to it. But when those wind and those waves come and you're in a sailboat, the boat begins, it's hard to keep it from tipping so much that you're taking on a little bit of water. And those waves are crashing, that the text tells us the boat was nearly swamped. That means that water is coming into the boat, and the boat is not floating on top of the water anymore. It's kind of down in it. When you get to the place of the boat being swamped, you get to the place of the boat nearly sinking. And these seasoned professionals, remember from our calling, these were fishermen. These weren't fishermen that went out on the weekend. These are fishermen who did it for a living. And the Sea of Galilee, these Mediterranean areas there, they were no stranger to storms. So this must have been a significant one to really startle and scare these men of the sea. A A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat. But Jesus, his posture is very different. You can only imagine we were given the emotional state of the disciples, but we're not given every bit of their physical activity. I'm sure you had the more seasoned, the fishermen of the bunch that were trying to work with the block and tackling of the boat to try and ease the sails, to try and keep it from tipping any more than it had to. And then you had Matthew, the tax collector, and some of the others that were just splashing water out of the boat as fast as they could. And it's not one boat, it's a number of boats, and they're all struggling together. It's beautiful that we have that, because just like many of the things we see in the gospel accounts and the stories there, there are witnesses. It's not even just the disciples who experienced this. There are those that are traveling with them that saw it happen, but they're all struggling, they're all panicking, and there at the rear of the boat, Jesus is laying on a cushion asleep. I don't know if there are very many pictures of peace better than that. In the midst of the turmoil and the storm and the chaos, Jesus is there asleep. Sleeping like a baby. He is at peace. And the disciples wake him. And they ask him the question. Maybe the question many of us ask in times that we're struggling, when the storm of our life is raging. Teacher, don't you care if we drown? See, the disciples saw something very different in Jesus. While Jesus was a picture of peace, the disciples didn't see peace. They saw apathy. And it's tough, because just like faith, I can speak words of faith with my mouth, but it's very difficult until I see the fruit of your actions in your life to know if that faith is real. It's also very difficult to assess a situation like this and know, is this apathy or is this peace? And we see later, as Jesus answers his disciples, that it is not apathy, but it is peace that comes with having the power that Jesus possesses. Well, the disciples panic and look for a way out. The posture of Jesus is comfortable and at peace and at rest. And finally, this morning, we see Jesus answer an important question, and he doesn't answer it with the words that we might expect. In verse 39, we see he got up. So Jesus got up and he rebuked the wind and he said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And then the wind died down and it was completely calm. So you can have that kind of peace when there is that kind of power in your life. And these disciples who have watched Jesus do amazing miracles to the flesh now saw Jesus do something they hadn't yet seen, and that was speak into the natural world. So he's seen these miracles where he spoke into the small, and now he's speaking into the waves and the wind, and he's saying, "Quiet, be still," and the waves and the wind and the storm obey him. But still, if we look at our passage, it's not yet enough to bring the pinnacle of faith. And maybe there isn't a pinnacle. Maybe our faith is never complete. Maybe it's never finished growing. But even after this, even after they saw Jesus calm the storm, what do the disciples say? Well, in verse 41, the passage says about them that they were terrified, and then they asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." The purpose, the method of going through this experience was to solidify faith. But even with that, it's still one step along the journey. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure it helped their faith. But where Jesus' words should bring peace and courage. Here they brought fear. The disciples are asking, who is this? Later, they answer the question. Later, Jesus brings them aside and he asks them, who do you say I am? Who does everyone else say I am? And who do you say I am? And for his inner circle, we see the transfiguration where they got to see Jesus kind of unwrap his human form and show his divinity in a way that I don't even know that I can visualize. The scriptures give us a picture of it, but I'm sure it falls short of the experience the disciples had as they saw Jesus in more of a glimpse of who he really was, as the spiritual realm showed itself to them through him. So that faith is still baking, it's still cooking, it's still being prepared in them. And it brings the question, if the disciples who watched Jesus heal the sick, have the blind see again, raise up the paralyzed, and now calm the storm. If that wasn't enough in them to let them know that they know that they know in that moment who Jesus was, what hope do I have? Well, thankfully, we have the benefit of hindsight. We get to see story after story. We get the full picture that the disciples were just beginning to experience. We get their stories. We get the resurrection and the cross. We get to see the miracles of the disciples as they become apostles in the early church. We get to see the boldness of Peter and Paul as the church goes from hundreds to hundreds of thousands. We get to see the power of God move, not just in the Christ, in Jesus, but in his church and in his people as his spirit is poured out. It says, quiet, be still, and the storm obeys. This reminds me of another passage where words wouldn't simply be enough. Jesus is questioned about healing on the Sabbath. Jesus is questioned about forgiving sins. And the Pharisees go to Jesus and say, what authority do you have to forgive this man's sin? And Jesus said, so that you can see that I have power over the former, I'm going to tell the man to get up and be healed. Jesus makes very clear that the forgiveness of sins was so much more valuable than the healing of the flesh, but so that they could know that he had power to do the thing that just seemed like words to them. He showed his power in the flesh and said, get up and walk. Here, Jesus could have said, guys, no, I care about you. It's okay. He could have tried to convince them that he wasn't trying to put them in harm's way. He could have given a justification for not warning for them for the storm. But instead, he gets up and he silences the seas. If he did the first, it would have just been words that Jesus spoke. But when he showed his power, he answered their question clearly. But he did so in a way that was undeniable. He speaks, quiet, be still. And Jesus has an important question for his disciples, one that I have asked myself repeatedly this week. In verse 40, Jesus said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? There's a lot of ways to read this. I think that when I first began to read through the Bible and read this passage, I thought this was more of a rebuke. Like, ye of little faith, that maybe Jesus was angry. But this week as I read the passage, I didn't read any anger in it. I think Jesus is asking, what will it take? How can I help you encourage and develop and stoke those coals of faith for them to be not just a simmering ember, but to become a raging fire within you? If Jesus were a king, one of the many kings or rulers of his time, the lack of faith in his disciples may have caused him to throw people out of the boat. If you read through the stories of the ancient Near East in antiquities, this was kind of common. But Jesus doesn't do that. No one was kicked off the boat. Even with their lack of faith, no one was thrown to the seas. They all made it to the other side, just as Jesus had declared at the beginning. And maybe this message was just for me this week. But if not, if you're going through a storm, if the water is raging, if your faith is being tested, then Jesus asks this question: why are you so afraid? What does it take to build that faith in you? Because Jesus isn't apathetic. His rest and his peace doesn't mean that he doesn't care. It's just that he has the power and the plan to get us to the other side. So I'll ask you the question we asked earlier. Knowing everything that you know, knowing all of the chaos and the pain that these storms will bring, knowing that the choice to step into the boat with Jesus will make life more challenging, more chaotic, but the master will be at the stern of the boat. Are you still willing to get in? Are you still willing to follow and to walk with Jesus? Because we know that the way this path goes, the place this road ends, is not easy street. It's the cross. Those disciples, just like we are disciples, they get to experience more hardship and more difficulty ahead. But the promise is they're never alone, and they make it to the other side. Jesus doesn't say, come follow me and I'll make you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Those things may come, but that's not the promise. Jesus says, pick up your cross, carry your cross, and follow me. The road will be hard, at points treacherous. There will be danger and toil and snare. There will be an adversary, an enemy, who at every step will seek to put speed bumps and roadblocks in your way. But we have a God who is so strong that he can sleep through the storm. At peace, not in apathy. And if you choose to get in the boat with him, it will be hard, but it will be good. So I ask you the question again as the worship team comes forward. When Jesus puts out his hand and invites you into the boat, what will you do? Let's worship together.